Hello, folks. This is Bela, and I'm recording this intro solo, as Mike is a bit busy wrapping things up for the semester. You know, when Mike and I get together to record a podcast, before we hit the record button, we typically have a conversation about what's going on in our lives and in the world. Basically, two good friends catching up since the last time they spoke. Back in episode 128, Mike and I did an experiment, and we hit the record button as soon as our conversation started, and we decided to include it as part of our regular podcast. We received some great comments from our listeners who said they really enjoyed that episode. We also received a very nice email from John, who suggested we make our pre-podcast conversation part of the podcast. Thank you, John, for your thoughtful email and suggestion. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners. Mike and I discussed John's suggestion, and we decided that we will make separate episodes out of our pre-podcast conversations. That way, when those listeners who are only interested in the unconventional path can easily skip over them. Not sure what we're going to label these episodes, but for now, we're going to call them our pre-podcast discussion. Also, I'm not quite sure how often we will release these episodes, as sometimes our conversations are not really podcast worthy. Well, enough of the introduction. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, Michael. You hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
Very nice background there.
Yeah, warm and cozy.
Yes, it looks nice. Perfect for the winter.
Yeah. Gray and kind of cold and drizzly here.
Background looks like a bit of an upgrade for you based on previous ones I've seen.
You're trying to be positive, you know?
Yeah, so how are you? It's been a while.
Yeah, made it back in one piece. So, you know, you crazy Americans, you know?
Yeah, boy, ain't that the truth.
Yeah, so I figure we're lucky to get in and get out and not have any flights canceled and not get sick and not get any fistfights or gunshots or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, good. So the trip was fine, uneventful, and the visit with the family was fine?
Yeah, I think I told you we canceled everything except for just going to see Sandy's mom.
Oh, okay.
And so that kept it way simpler. And we changed. We just told our friends that we were going to meet, that if you want to meet us. So I bought a doctor's bag and two big Yeti thermoses. Uh-huh. And I filled one with coffee and one with hot chocolate and brought some booze and some cups. And I said, look, the bar's open, right? We'll go for an outside walk. I'll bring hot beverages, right? But we'll go for a little hike and we'll hang out. And one set of friends are like, oh, it's too cold. And the other, we met three other friends and family kind of that way and went for nice hikes at different places. And so that was great. You know, it was safe and it was fun. And all three were like, oh, I wasn't sure about this, you know, because here in Germany, this is what we do, right? We go outside, we drink hot beverages. You know what I mean? Right.
I was going to say it's very continental sounding.
And I'm like, just trust me on this. It'll be great because this is what we've done with our friends here. You know, even in the winter, we meet them and go for a hike somewhere interesting. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a long hike or even particularly scenic, but you can talk and keep a little distance and be outside and it's way safer.
Yeah.
So they were like, wow, we'll do this with our friends. I'm like, yeah, here's what I ordered. You know what I mean? Right. It all fit in this bag. Right. And it's like the you know, the drink doctor is in, you know, and the bar's open and some people drank and some people didn't and it's fine. Right. But, you know, you just pour a little shot of whatever in if you want in your hot cocoa and it's great, you know. So that was fun.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm glad to hear it. And how are things there in Germany?
So, you know, you've heard me say for 2 years now that, oh, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, but Münster has always been better than average, right? We've always been in a little bubble. And then in the last 3 weeks, we came back to Münster had gone through the roof higher numbers than the rest of the country. And there's, you know, we read the local paper and nobody's quite sure. There's no one reason why, but just people let their guard down and traveled over the holiday and our numbers spiked. You know, we'll see. So we We stayed. Well, Sandy had a dentist appointment today. She tested this morning. We tested. We had a test the day before, the day we left. So we tested on Sunday there and flew out Sunday night. We did a home test Tuesday or Wednesday. They said the Omicron's like a 3-day incubation.
Yeah.
Negative. Sandy tested today before she went, tested. We brought a big bag of tests. I think I told you I bought like 100 tests, right? Yeah. So we were handing out like candy. Everybody's in the, you know, oh, a test, right? Because I guess you're, it's not so easy to find them there. So I was the test elf and giving, like, yeah, a test before, you know, like, so Sandy's relatives, before they came over, they gave them all tests to take. And then we'll go, we have appointments tomorrow. And then that will be 5 days. And so we didn't have to quarantine, but we kind of been really careful because we weren't sure. And it's bad here and there. So I went to the grocery store and that was it. And I was super careful with my mask and everything. Yeah. But everybody wears a mask here. Bela, it's unbelievable. Everybody gives you distance. Everybody wears a mask. Nobody's got their mask over their nose. Everybody's got a good mask, right? Not a shitty one. So it's just a whole different ball game here. And that makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Well, what about you?
As we record this on January 7th, we had a little COVID scare. So we had, let's say, the Tuesday after Christmas. So that's 28th. On January 28th, we had a little get-together at our house with our son Jason and his wife and the two kids. And then Elaine's sister and her two daughters and her husband. And the day later, or day and a half later, Elaine's sister calls us and says, I just tested positive for COVID.
Oh, dear.
So that threw us into a tizzy because we were supposed to leave in a few days to go down and see our granddaughter, who's not vaccinated, right? So we called up Andy, who's our son, and talked to him and his wife, and they're both ER docs, and they said, nope, you guys are not coming. So we respect that, right? And even though, and we went and tested, and we had a PCR test. Excuse me, we had the rapid test, and it was like 3 days after or something. Mm-hmm. And Andy said, you know, that test has a lot of false negatives. And he said, it's really in day five where that test really starts to give you accurate data, because it really takes a 5 days of incubation before that test kind of kicks in.
Yep. So, and the levels are high enough in your bloodstream to accurately predict
that that it can find them. Exactly. So we canceled that trip out there, and then we've had no symptoms. And yesterday we had a PCR test, which is like, you know, 8-9 days post exposure, and we haven't gotten the results yet. But we had that yesterday at 11, still waiting to hear on the results. But my guess is everything's negative. But of course, you know, it sort of gives you a little pause. And we've been laying low. We've ordered groceries online. We haven't gone anywhere. So I think that was the first time we sort of had a known exposure. Yeah. And the sad thing of it was, you know, we didn't get to go see our granddaughter, which we were really looking forward to. So that was the only bad thing that happened out of it, but that's okay. Yeah. But yeah, tests here
better safe than sorry.
Yeah, tests here are really in short supply. It just seems like with an Omicron, everyone's wants to get a test, and you know, we got caught with not enough tests, and so there's long lines for that. I think not as many as you. We have, I think, six rapid tests at home. We haven't burned one yet because we've been able to get appointments for tests. It hasn't been that bad.
That's better.
Yeah. So we're saving those in case of, you know, we need to do something quick. But so we've been able to get appointments. Maybe not that day we haven't been able to get an appointment, right? I can't call up at 10 in the morning and expect to get an appointment at 3 in the afternoon, but a day or two out and get an appointment. But the numbers here are huge. The infection numbers are huge. The hospitalizations haven't really spiked all that bad. Certainly not as bad as the original COVID. And they just approved some pills, some therapeutic treatment. So that if you take these pills, regimen of, I don't know how many doses or whatever, I think there's two of them have been approved now by the FDA. Supposedly it's not a prevention. It's a, once you get infected, if you take it early in your infection cycle, it sort of basically eliminates hospitalizations. So that's kind of interesting. Haven't heard much about use of that. And interestingly enough, from the data that I've been able to garner, and I don't know why they don't share this data very much, somewhere between 30 to 40% of the people in the hospital are vaxxed. Right? So it's a bigger number than one would expect, right, being vaccinated. So clearly the vaccine helps. And I'm not suggesting at all that it doesn't. I think it's a good thing. I'm vaxxed. I'm boosted. I believe in it. But I was surprised at how big that number was, that, you know, 30 to 40%. It's in that range of people in the hospital are actually vaxxed. And the good news is with the Omicron, people not getting that sick. There's not that many people in the ICU. The deaths are way down, you know, for the number of infections we have. So I think it's all heading in the right direction.
Yeah. And, you know, remember, too, that with the number that 30% or 40%, 60% are vaccinated.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So it's, you know what I mean? Right. That actually makes it still sounds like it's a lot. But because more people are vaccinated than not vaccinated, that number is actually a sign that being vaccinated helps. And it's right. It's not a perfect solution, but it's definitely reduces your chance of being hospitalized. So yeah, you know, a lot of it's just people need to understand a little bit of statistics. It really makes me even want to scream louder that everybody should have statistics class in school. And if you do, because to understand epidemics, you must understand statistics, right? To understand what these data means and be a good consumer of the information that's out there. Because everybody you and I have talked about this before in a very different context, that we can get statistics to say whatever we want, right? Same data, you can say anything you want, and you have to understand the principles of statistics to be able to see through sometimes these efforts to manipulate the data to for one side or the other to make a point.
That's right. The data is nuanced, right?
Yep.
When 70% or 60% of the population is vaccinated, you expect that's going to skew the data. So
Right, because if it was equal, then 60% of the people, if 60% are vaccinated, and if it didn't matter, 60% of the people would be the hospitalization rate would be 60%. And if it's only 30%, well, then you're right. It's half, you know, it's twice as good, as not being vaccinated. But you got to understand that to, you know what I mean, right? To make sense of the data.
Yeah.
And nobody on TV that I know, most people don't give it enough time to explain it so clearly. They just go for the soundbite. And again, that's a favorite topic that you and I have talked about, right? The soundbite just doesn't do the data justice.
It doesn't. It does very little justice, is the conclusion I'm coming to.
Mm-hmm. Right? It hurts more than it helps.
Yeah.
On either side, again, regardless of which side is doing the soundbites, you can try to be neutral.
Yeah, because you can cherry pick your soundbite. Right. And you know, yesterday, the president gave a speech here, sort of remembering the January 6th riots on the Capitol. And depending upon which network you listen to, you got totally different impressions of that speech because they use different sound bites from the speech. Right? Yep. I mean, it's like 180 degrees opposite. It's just remarkable.
And this is the scourge of social media, because since your feed picks up one or the other, depending on your preferences, right?
That's
we have these two different versions of the news, and
that's
it's the worst thing that could ever happen.
That's right.
To the American people.
That's right. Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I have in my news feed, there's sort of the raw, I call it the raw news feed, which I think is probably based on what other people, how popular those things are. Mm-hmm. It's not based on any of my preferences, right? It's preference. My preferences are stripped out of it. And then it has, you know, news for you, which is which is based upon what I click on. And it's amazing how different that is. And the stories there don't show up at all on the other one, right? Because I click on things about sailing. I click on things about fishing and other things, skiing and other things I'm interested in. So it really is. You're absolutely right, man. If the only thing I would look at was my personal news feed, it's skewed really bad.
And I think everybody's is. And that's the worst thing.
Right.
The worst thing that you could possibly do.
Yeah.
And that's how the U.S. has gotten, and lots of parts of the world has gotten into such a mess.
Yeah. Have they started to, you know, make noise about regulating these social media things over there in Germany?
Much more so than in the U.S. Yes. I mean, I don't know how much they're working on it, but the EU typically tends to be. So, you know, we can talk about regulation, and we'll talk about regulation a little later in, when we do the podcast.
Yes.
But, you know, regulation is an interesting question. And, you know, in the U.S., you have an unlimited amount of political donations and lobbying that can be done by companies. And obviously their goal is to reduce or tilt the regulations in their favor so that their shareholders benefit, so that they're more profitable, without taking into account the needs of the rest of the society. If you've taken an economics class, negative externalities, right, for kind of the layperson, that's just when, you know, bad stuff happens that the person that does it doesn't pay for, right? So if your car pollutes the air, people get sick from that, but you're not paying for that in the price of the gasoline or the price of the car,
right?
Right? Or the you know, anything along those lines. Even when it's buying a, this is where the idea of a tax on sugar, right? So when you buy a large Coca-Cola with sugar in it, that has negative health benefits that society has to pay for, but that's not reflected in the cost, right? This is why regulations exist, to correct for these market failures. And we could argue left, right, and center about whether these are good or bad. But in Europe, we don't, well, in Germany and in France and in lots of other, not all the parts, but there is much more constraints on corporate lobbying and corporate donations to politicians. Therefore, the politicians more see their role as balancing. They all want to support a healthy economy, right? It's a capitalist, you know what I mean, right, model at heart. And businesses should make a profit, and they should return a reward for the risk that their shareholders take. This is not socialism, right? It's right. All capitalism. But they view capitalism here as, you know, you balance out corporate profits with the community, with the individuals, rich and poor, and what's best for most. And therefore, we see more regulation here. And we see a heavier hand, I think, on how the government kind of treats these types of situations. So they tend to get more involved in regulation, and you have more rules, and they don't support corporations so much, right? And they more are designed to protect consumers, especially people that don't have power. And that's the way it works here. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So money does skew everything.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to. That's the interesting thing.
Right. And you have, I think we've talked about this in the past, in Germany, you have more than two parties, right? So there's three or so parties that are.
There's three in power, and then there's four or five, six, seven. There's some really small ones, but the major parties. There's a left center and a right center. Those are the two biggest ones. And the right center was in power, and they're now out of power. They're in the minority. And then we have the Green Party is the third biggest party now. That's come on strong. There's the Free Democratic Party, which is kind of the pro-business. They're the third member of the coalition. There's the AfD. That's the hard right. They don't have much power in the parliament. And there's, I think, four, five, six, seven other parties, smaller parties.
Yeah.
There's a multi-party system, and it works.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's another thing that's that's causing some challenges for us here in the United States, is that we have a two-party system, and you're either on one team or you're on the other.
Yeah,
and
it No compromise.
No compromise. And it's all about what's good for the team. We have lost sight of what's good for the country and what's good for the citizens and the people of this country. And it's gotten to be down. What do we need to do so we can win the next election?
Yep.
And there's too much focus on that. And unfortunately, not enough focus on what's the right things to do for the country and the people in this country and the people of the world. Right.
Yep.
And so
it's about how the politicians can stay in power because they get rich in the U.S.
Yeah,
politicians don't get rich. It's service here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it used to be in the U.S.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that if you look at people who've been in Congress for more than two or three terms, they're all multimillionaires.
Right. It's a huge problem.
So like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And many of them brag about their humble upbringings, you know, how they come from poor roots. I say, okay. And you've been in public service your whole career. How did you get rich? How did that happen?
Yeah. And if anybody chooses to look, it's because these lobbying organizations pay them a lot of money,
right?
That they can use almost any way they want. And then they give them the legislation that reduces the regulation or tilts the regulation in their favor. And Facebook is a huge donator, right? Social media, Twitter,
sure.
Right? These organizations, right. They donate money and they really have a strong influence because, of course, the politicians want those donations.
Right.
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 And here, there isn't that same motivation because they can't donate money and they can't give the gifts and they can't pay for trips and they can't give jobs to relatives. These have been uncovered, they've been big scandals and the politicians have been forced to resign. And so there's a huge disincentive for the politicians to accept these things, and therefore they're not beholden to them. And they try to look analytically at, okay, we want these companies, we want a strong digital economy. This is really important. We want our citizens to have access to lots of different information. But when they see data, and there's plenty of data on this, that Facebook and Twitter are bad for democracy and they're bad for public discourse and they're harmful to kids, then this is where the regulators step in and say, wait a minute, right? You're not doing enough. So they give them penalties or fines. I don't think the EU has been even strong enough so far, but I think that's going to happen. We'll see this in the next couple of years. And the EU will regulate first and then the US will follow. That's usually the model.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have term limits over there?
It varies, but typically, yes. Typically there's term limits on local politicians. But it varies kind of level by level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Country by country.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, cool. That was a good conversation. Should we get into the podcast?
Sure. One more. I just want to make one more comment.
Oh yeah, sure.
For you,
please.
Which is interesting. So I just pulled up my local test center, which is literally less than a 5-minute walk from my apartment, from my front door. I just go around the corner. And so I can get you an appointment in 25 minutes. There's 4 spots available at 4:15.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
I can get you, there's 6 spots at 20:20. There's 4 spots at 25 after. There's only 1 spot left at 12:30. But in the next hour, there's about 40 appointments available just at the one test center around the corner.
Wow.
And if you're a German resident like I am, it's free.
And are the test center, who runs these test centers?
So this is pretty cool. So again, you know, we talk about, the role of government, right? And in this case, these are all done by the private sector, but the government reimburses the cost. The governments and the insurers, I think there's a formula. But everybody has health insurance, so you give your ID, and of course people say, "Oh, I don't want to have an ID." We all have an ID that identifies us, and it's tied to our health insurance is right included
right.
in that information, so that if we're sick, everything is there available for the emergency people, and we have lots of protections on that. So Germans are very big into data security and privacy, but we find a balance so that. Yeah, we show our ID, the insurers pay for part of it, and the government pays for the rest so that there's no disincentive for anybody to get tested.
Yeah, yeah. Here, the testing sites are a hodgepodge of hospitals, you know, private organizations, basically, the local government organizations, the state organization, and you know, pharmacies, again, which is private. So it's just this hodgepodge. And each one of them has their own website. You have to go to each website of each of their own websites to try to find an appointment. It's a challenge. And you know, I think
you
about
know how to solve this.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think about, you know, people who don't have internet access, or people who, you know, are like my mom, right? Or, you know, older people who are not savvy with those types of things. They're screwed, right?
Yep.
And so it's just, and you know, you look into the big cities, and there they have, you know, vans on the side of the road that are doing testing because their demand is so high, and you know that they've done a reasonable job in responding to those things. But it seems like we really got caught with our pants down in this country with this notion of testing here, particularly around the holidays. We had the surge going on, and we kept getting, you know, the messaging was get tested before you go get together for the holidays, get tested. So people went and got tested, and it just broke the system.
Yeah. Yeah. But we know how to do web integration. You know, there should be one app, and there should be, we do all these bots. You know, if you call your cable company, you're talking to a freaking computer. It's really easy to apply this technology for older people. So you call an 800 number, right? And you get connected, and the bot makes the appointment for you, right? No problem.
Yeah.
I don't know why we don't do this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, well, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But interesting comparison in the two of it systems.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
Granted, the U.S. is a much bigger population, and the population is more concentrated here in urban areas. So it's easier to do things like this. So, you know, I say this not like, oh, we're better than you, but it's two different situations. And I always like to be respectful and understand the differences. But it's super easy here in Munster, where I sit, to be able to, in a half an hour, go get a test and have the results in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that about the urban areas, because it appears that here the big problems are in the large urban centers.
Interesting.
That's where the testing lines are really long, and people are waiting, you know, hours and hours and hours in line. It's not up where I live, and, you know, I can't get a test like you, you know, in the next half hour, but probably in another 2 weeks I will be able to. Just because demand's going to go down and stuff. So, yeah, it seems like the challenges are in the big urban centers here and not in the rural parts of the country.
Yeah, and the supply chain and the staffing issues that are plaguing lots of different industries and lots of different countries all over the world are partially with this too, right? I think that there's some shortages of the actual tests. Certainly getting people to work in these centers is a challenge.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't want to be so quick to lay the blame on any one factor, but there's certainly things that could make this easier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's interesting, one of the big centers here, the National Guard is, you know, doing the testing and stuff.
Right. So. Which to me is great if we have these people and we, you know, we can use them, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, local people, and call them up as part of the National Guard. This is an emergency, right? And I get it. We can argue about this, right? But I don't think that's an inappropriate use to help with a holiday surge.
Right.
I don't want to do it all the time, right?
That's
not the right use. But as long as we have enough material and places, if staffing's the issue, that's a great time when there's a surge to use the National Guard.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I mean, that's what they're for. I think that's one of the things they're for.
One
right?
of the things.
Now, I'll tell you the interesting thing that I never thought about that my son, the ER doc, pointed out. So when the National Guard calls up a bunch of people to administer tests, or they have sent National Guard healthcare workers into hospitals that have been overwhelmed. Well, who do you think those National Guard healthcare physicians and nurses are?
Right. They work at other hospitals.
They work at other hospitals.
Right.
So, you know, you take them from, okay, because they get called up for duty. That's part of the deal, right? They got to go do their duty, and they get shipped off someplace else. And now the hospital they work at is really put under strain.
You're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
But again, you know, we have smart staffing situations, right? The solutions. Companies that employ lots of workers have ways to move people around. And, you know, we should be moving doctors and nurses around, you know, to handle these things, but do it in a way where they have advance notice and where they're paid for their issues, and we provide them with transportation, right? I mean, there's definitely a problem where some regions are hit harder than others. Sure. And then they return the favor. You know, we know it's, we've seen these waves and you can almost predict, right? It's like, okay, this is quiet now, but this is bad now. So let's ship 100 people over here for now and pay for it and right, make it easy right. for them and give them extra pay because they're away from home and all these things, right? And then when the wave shifts the other way, guess what? These people come back and the people who are here now because the wave has passed there, they move here. And we might need to go to this model if this is an endemic, right? We're going to deal with these waves in the future. We need to think about smarter staffing models, right?
Right, right. And one of the interesting parts of that is given our healthcare system is made up of thousands of independent, diverse little organizations, whether it be, you know, doctor's offices or hospitals, most hospitals, there's a few large hospital chains in this country, but most of them are not large hospital chains. Some of that's being consolidated. So those things become a bit more of a challenge unless you put together a big database and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, who calls the shots, et cetera. Whereas if you're working for Humana what's the big one in California? It's not Humana.
I think so.
Yeah, Humana out in California. There's a big
Kaiser Permanente.
You know, yeah. They have 100 hospitals or whatever, so they can move staff around if they need it. But yeah, it is interesting how
you know, maybe this is time to rethink the U.S. healthcare system too. I mean, I would argue that that's long overdue, right?
I would agree with you.
I like to open these can of worms for you, but you know, it may be time that this really shows the weaknesses and the unequal distribution of resources and the staffing issues and the pay disparities that face workers. And well, maybe it's...
I agree with you 100%. I'm a big proponent of sort of one healthcare system. And this now our conversation has gone full circle because we go back to all the money that's involved with politicians. This will not happen, not for a while, until we solve the money problem.
Well, until we solve the money, get the money out of politics. It's really, I don't know if there's any leaders that are capable of doing this, but to me, it's like, okay, we need constitutional amendments in all 50 states to, I think, for some of these things, but we don't need it for some things. And some of these things are multi-party system to have where there's not two parties, where there's multiple parties, term limits, as you said, at least for the next 15 years, right? And getting the money out of, you know, true campaign finance reform, getting money out of it and getting the lobbyists out of the picture. And if you can do those three things, right, I think all of a sudden you can go a long way towards solving some of the problems with healthcare and immigration and employment and education that are hard problems. But there's lots of models all over the world that work.
Right. And I think it would get us to focus a little bit more on working together and working towards solving the problems and challenges we have as a nation and as a world, as opposed to, okay, which team are you on? and you're fighting for the things that team wants. So
And shifting to all about me to all about us.
Yeah.
You know, there's just been the difference is really striking, Bela, I think, between the U.S. and here that I've seen is that in the U.S., everybody's focused on what's best for them as an individual or a small family. Right. And I mean, that's to some extent the case here, but there's a stronger, I think you hear more conversations. What's best for our community?
Yeah.
What's best for our country? What's best for all the people who live here, rich and poor, old and young, right? You know, one of the things that strikes me in the U.S. is old people, a lot of them, and I'm old too, right? But a lot of old people, I don't want to pay for schools, right? My kids have already gone through school, right? And it's like, that's the stupidest thing I could possibly imagine, right? That you want your kids and your grandkids to live in a world where people are educated, right? Or I don't want to pay for other people's health care. And again, that's the stupidest thing in the world. If everybody can have preventative access to preventative health care, the costs for the system go way, way down. The data are clear, right? Same with education, same with, right? These things are better when we deal with them as a community rather than as an individual. And those things, I mean, again, the libertarian, and you will agree, right? There's certain things that the government is better at providing.
Absolutely.
And there's certain things where they shouldn't. And healthcare and education are two areas where at least basics should be provided to everybody. It's way cheaper, right? And then you can add on these extras if you want, no problem. But yeah, it's a no-brainer to me. People just have to open their eyes and listen and use their own brains to think about it. And we need a different system.
I agree. All right. Let's get on recording the podcast, eh?
Yeah.
Well, that's it for that episode. I hope you enjoyed our pre-podcast discussion. As usual, we always appreciate your comments and suggestions. You can reach us at bela.and.mike@gmail.com. Take care and see you next time.